If you're looking to save some money on your wireless plan, take a look at Visible Wireless. They're a transparent wireless carrier with nothing to hide. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, where you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. One line wireless, just $25 a month with taxes and fees included. That's unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Switch now at Visible.com. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. Like Visible, the wireless company making wireless visible.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
What's happening, friends? Welcome to Unlocked. It is episode 382 already of IGN's weekly Xbox show. Plenty to talk about this week. A couple of significant releases on Xbox. Actually, more than we have time to talk about. We're going to zero in on Anthem, out in its early release form, if you're an EA subscriber, along with Crackdown 3, of course, the first major first-party game of the year for Microsoft. Along with, we'll talk about BioWare leaving the door open for Mass Effect to return, the positive effects of Game Pass for developers, and a whole lot more. Stick with us here. I'm Ryan McCaffrey. I'm getting over a cold. Destin Legarry, not getting over a cold.
I wanted to wish everybody a good day to start this show.
I like that. Excellent. Brandon Tyrell, a little coffee.
A little stuffed up.
And Miranda Sanchez, allergy ridden.
Hello, yes. I'm very congested and I may have to step away to go sneeze and blow my nose. So excuse me.
I feel great. I feel very bad for the rest of you.
It's
fine. Please stay away.
I feel bad for our listeners who have to listen to the hacking. And it's that time of year.
That just means we all have sexy, smoky voices today.
Just remember, blow your nose. Don't sniffle.
Right.
Your nose.
Got to get that stuff out.
Your body wants
it
gone.
Yes.
All tips from Ruth.
Yeah, so if any you know, publishers out there or people, if you need a VO for a movie trailer, we're in that gravelly voiced,
in a world.
Exactly. We'll call us up. We're available.
In a time.
All right. Let's get right to it. I want to start with Anthem because Anthem is arguably the highest profile release of 2019 so far in what is a packed February, I think, of the five major releases that all happened this past weekend.
Yeah,
I think Anthem's the headliner, certainly. Whether it's actually turned out that way remains to be seen.
Let's run it down real quick.
Yeah.
It was Crackdown 3.
Yes.
Jump Force.
Yep.
Far Cry.
Metro Exodus. Which actually reviewed very well on IGN.
It did, yeah. Far Cry New Dawn and then Anthem.
Yeah.
So those five
games. That's it.
Those are some, yeah, I mean, that's quite a lineup.
You know.
Apex Legends in there somewhere.
Just a normal.
Well, that came out already.
Yeah.
Just a normal Friday.
As far as, that was out before last Friday. But yes, big February release.
It's also worth noting that Anthem's launch is a little weird because this is specifically referring to the PC players who have Origin Access Premier.
Right. Yeah. Consult your spreadsheets.
Right. If you have that tier, then you have the full game. But if you have an Xbox One, you have EA Access, you get 10 hours this week.
There's that a handy dandy 8-point chart that will guide you through the launch.
That chart and that staggered release is abysmal. Don't ever do that again, EA Origin.
Or anyone else.
Anybody. It's awful.
And what's interesting about this is the three of you have played this game extensively.
Which one?
Anthem.
Yes.
I have not, so I'm going to kind of just steer the conversation. I do want to play, but after hearing you guys talk about it and seeing you tweet about it over the weekend, I'm actually glad I haven't played yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so, like, Destin, you in particular, you're like our shared world shooter aficionado. You're our expert. You play.
I like that.
You do.
Take it.
you know, thousands of hours in Destiny. You've played a bunch of The Division. You've been so psyched for Anthem.
Yeah.
And you had just an unfortunate experience with regard to the technical side of the game that needs to be addressed and is being addressed by BioWare. But
yeah.
Yeah. So just
cover that a little bit, but what did you think of the game? Because the demo only gave us, we jumped in at level 10, like right just somewhere in the middle of the game. How's the story? Like, that's what I want to know as a BioWare fan, Mass Effect fan, KOTOR. How's the story? How is this as a BioWare game as opposed to, you know, an online shared world shooter?
So I'm going to start with a lot of critical thoughts here at the top of the show with a preface that I'm still playing it and I'm still going to continue to play it. I think I'm just a sucker for games with a lot of potential, and I see a lot of potential here. But now let's get into the critical. I feel like the entirety of the Anthem experience is a really disjointed, sort of oddly constructed together narrative, gameplay mesh.
Yeah.
Parts of it work really, really well. I think the storytelling has its moments of brightness, but it has a lot of convoluted, similar mechanics that you continually revisit to the point where they start making fun of themselves within the gameplay that ties in. Now, the overall story told, at first, I didn't really get into it. At about the midpoint of the game, the midpoint, I'm like, okay, I'm in.
I'm on board.
Yeah, I'm on board. And then after that, I saw it through to conclusion, but it took a long time for me to realize what was happening.
Slow burn.
So they didn't set it up well.
Yeah, the hard part with that is I think what helped me get into it was because I started reading those Cortex Entry items.
I read everything.
So that actually helped me ease into it. Also because I really like the characters. I think maybe more than some of the characters in Andromeda, like instantly infectious personalities that I just wanted to get to know and hang around and date, but you can't.
Yeah.
Very angry.
There were a few times.
There's some very flirty moments. And I'm like, excuse me?
Yeah.
BioWare? What are you doing? Yeah, I don't have allergies. It's fine. It's very fired up now. No, it was really surprising to see that. And from where I'm at, like, I know I'm way earlier on than you guys because I got sick, couldn't play. But it feels like this was designed first as like a solo campaign. Like, everything tells me, like, hey, this is a story idea they wanted to run with. And they try to figure out how to make it multiplayer, and it feels disjointed in that a lot.
Yeah.
Can I ask real quick, Miranda, were you, when you, the time you did play, were you playing by yourself, or were you in a group?
So I played alone with random people always.
Yeah. Okay.
I did the exact same thing.
And let's talk about why that experience is like that. It's because your friends, like Miranda, you're at a different point than I am, and it's really difficult for us to play together because I want to experience all the story beats. And I did every single story thing available, basically, in the game.
Same.
Every single story thing took me about 25 hours. I've heard people completing main campaign in 12 hours. I did everything.
I wonder if that's I know there's a bonus for getting XP when you play together with friends. And I did the exact same thing as Miranda. I played solo the entire time. And the way that it works is you are always matchmaked into everything that you do.
Unless you change your privacy settings and you can play alone if you'd like.
Which I don't recommend.
Except
for free play. But you can play alone
because
the campaign.
The game is balanced for four players. And the way that I saw it was when you do this story stuff, you're not ever forced to move through it at the pace of other players. But when you get into the gameplay section, it's just like having three other javelins with you. I consider them basically NPCs, right? we never talked. We never engaged. Every once in a while, we'd wave emote or throw flares.
Nobody can trigger a story thing that interrupts what you're doing or...
No, so what happens...
She's so tight.
So what happens is when everyone goes in to the cutscene, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I actually wanted to watch all the cutscenes. If you decided to skip the cutscene...
I can confirm this. Yeah, you're screwed.
Yeah, essentially.
So
you basically jump into the gameplay aspect while everyone else is watching the cutscene. So you could start early, but you don't pull everyone else with you.
Okay, good.
I can confirm that because there was a point where I literally missed out on a pivotal cutscene. I hit a loading screen, and I probably sat there for 5 to 7 minutes, and I'm like, all right, I gotta kill the client and relaunch the game, which I had to do several times during my gameplay experience because of audio drops. I think I had off the top of my head, I can think of 7 instances where the audio cut out completely, and the only way to fix that is to quit the game and restart.
And I guess just real quick to set a ground rule here. You guys were all playing on PC.
You had
PC, right? That's the only way you could play the whole game.
There was an Xbox 10-hour thing available, so a lot of Xbox players were playing.
But the two of you finished the campaign.
On PC.
I did, yes.
So that's you couldn't do that in 10 hours on Xbox.
I don't think there's any way you could finish the main story in 10 hours.
So you got to wait for the proper Xbox release before Xbox can actually finish the campaign.
But
right, thank you.
I saw your tweet that you were getting a bunch of audio drops, and it was essentially the same issue we were having when we went up to Edmonton. When we were capturing all those times, we'd have to stop capturing.
You were having it, right?
Because my audio would drop at the beginning of a stronghold or something. Mm-hmm. And I saw your tweet, and I was like, that's weird. I hadn't experienced that at all until last night. I experienced it once running the—
It just cuts completely,
one,
right?
Running the Hive Tyrant Mine stronghold. And I was playing with a Colossus on my team. I was a Storm always.
Ranger for life. Sorry.
100% Storm. If you're not a Storm.
I like the Storm most, but everyone else on the Wiki's team's playing Storm, so I was like, fine, I'll play Ranger.
Storm's real good.
But I was running it with two Colossi. Mm-hmm. Then I got the audio drop right at the beginning of the stronghold. So I'm wondering if it's something about one of the sound effects tied to the Colossus.
I ran Ranger, dude, and I got it consistently.
So, all right. Interesting. So let's get out of the muck on that. So
sure.
Technical issues. I know loading times were a big thing talked about.
Yeah.
Again, this is on PC. We'll see how the final Xbox release is.
Yeah.
I didn't say this on air. I mentioned it off air to you, but I did miss out on a pivotal cutscene. With the loading, I guess I kind of did mention it, but a pivotal cutscene. Yeah. I was very upset about this. And the final cutscene, my character was invisible.
No.
So two of the main story beats were bugged, but they did say they're working on that for Friday.
There's a lot. There's a big day one patch kind of thing coming out. Hopefully PC gets it sooner than later, just because, you know, day one's kind of already hit technically.
Yeah.
In a weird way.
Yeah, you can play the whole game legally. on PC. So yeah, it's on. I feel bad for you that you've been so excited for this game and that your first experience, that you can never have the first experience again.
Mm-hmm.
The first 50 hours.
Yeah. Had those, significant technical issues. So, you know, we posted a story on IGN, BioWare detailed there is a massive day one, even though, because you're right, Brandon, it's not really day one anymore. But so hopefully a lot of this stuff is resolved for when it goes wide on Xbox on Friday. But yeah, I personally am going to take a wait and see approach. I do want to play the game. I probably mostly by myself. I'll just do the thing where you guys were just jumping in with random match made people. You know, it's a brand new BioWare IP, and I love their stuff. So, but yeah, everything you guys are saying is just telling me,
so
just press pause right now and don't play this yet.
I would like to say the one place where I would like to jump in with friends is in free play, because it's really a shame when you come up against one of the big titans, which is like the biggest monsters you can kind of fight as that we know of so far in Anthem. And you're alone, and no one wants to come and help you fight it. So then you spend 20 minutes fighting it by yourself.
It does take like 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, and like you're just kind of trying to cheese it because you're not supposed to meant to fight on your own.
And if it dies while you're down, you don't get loot right now.
What?
Yeah.
Oh.
If you finish strongholds and you're dead and loot drops, it's bad.
So
no, it's a problem. They're addressing it.
It sounds like you guys do very much like the game. Technical things aside,
based on everything we've said, I would say,
here we go.
That's not not what we've.
You said you're the healthy one.
Yeah. No, it's happening. It's all happening right. Live on set.
Patient 0, 1, and 2. Here, hi, patient 3.
Yeah. So I think we've been fairly critical of the game so far. But Ryan, what you were getting at is, I'm still going to play it. I still like the gear grind. I love the combo system. There's moments of fun and enjoyment to be had within Anthem. There's a lot of technical stuff that you have to be aware of. I am very glad I'm not doing this review because I don't think it's going
to
review well anywhere.
Because
of these problems out of the game.
Well, Brandon, you were telling me... Mm-hmm. Just again, a thing that's like a ray of sunshine through this, you know, maybe dark cloud that will pass. They will. It's a question of how long. Like it will get better. But
let me speak to that real quick.
Yeah.
I know you're going somewhere. Over the weekend, there was an exploit discovered where if you hit level 30 and go into free play, once you similar to how Destiny kind of did it, you find random chests. Not random. You find chests out in the world. We'll have a guide for it. So I went online yesterday and found just kind of like somebody had posted a short circuit to grab all these different chests. And apparently
they drop Masterwork and Legendaries.
Thanks, Destin. Yeah. Apparently level 30, they drop the best gear in the game. So you can literally just jump into a free play, run the circuit, exit, go back in, run the circuit, and get the best stuff. And within 8 hours,
not even,
BioWare had patched it. So
nice.
That is the sort of level of response time you're looking at. And, you know, from everything we've been saying and everything they've told us, this game is built to be changed on the fly on the back end by pulling levers and turning dials. So I have all the utmost faith that all of this stuff is going to be addressed.
Yeah, and you were telling me just the sensation of like just flying over like a bunch of birds and
Like, so there
you were comparing it to kind of Avatar.
There are moments, and I think in my
like
very,
from a visual, you know, presentation kind of.
I think my first preview at E3 last year, I said it is Iron Man meets Avatar, and that's exactly what we got. Like you fly. I mean, I was playing on. I have a decent gaming PC at home.
La-ti-da, well,
it is nothing compared to your power rig. I assure you. I think I'm using like a 1080. Not even a TI, just a 1080. But I fly over a chasm, and you look down, and you see the waterfalls, and then like this flock of purple birds goes soaring over the tree line, and this like a god ray of sun comes down and just sort of illuminates things, and you're just like, man, this is a really pretty game.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I kind of disagree with you. I think I really enjoy it. I think it is a good game so far. I did not run into as many technical issues as you did, so I think that might have something to do with it. There were cutscenes where like the camera was too far back, so I was looking through my character's face.
I had that too,
and I like see.
That's one of the things in the patch notes.
Oh, awesome!
Yeah,
good to know. I mean, I'll never unsee that, but good to know. But you see like the back of his eyeballs and like his mouth going like this.
It was scary.
It is a little scary. I will say though, like, I mean, I had a bunch of like interviews with like film industry people on a separate screen that I was watching while I was playing. So the load times never really bothered me. All this to say is like mileage may vary, right? Like I did not have the same technical burdens that you did. So my experience was much more positive. But I am at the end of the game now, and I am starting to feel I've done all the strongholds. I've done all the legendary contracts. And I'm not even level 30 yet. So it's just more of that.
Yeah.
And while I enjoy it and I find it very fun and that gear chase really fun, I am going to see fatigue setting in pretty quickly.
And again, we don't know how many of what – we don't know quite what the technical picture of this game will look like on Xbox on Friday.
Yeah, for me, I only got stuck in the launch bay.
You're on Xbox, right?
I couldn't get out. No.
No, oh, yeah. PC. Sorry.
Yeah. I think the 1X is going to look really good.
We'll have a review in progress. Obviously, this is an evolving situation. Posting very soon on probably by the time you see or hear this podcast. So that will cover the PC version, and then that will be updated and we'll just keep adding to it and bringing and eventually finalizing it over the course of probably the next week or so. That'll cover Xbox and of course PS4 as well. So yeah, we'll see what happens, but it's great to have Anthem out there and something new.
I mean, we've been covering it for so many years, and even in this last year it was really intensive because we did a lot of like exclusive coverage and behind the scenes, and like we've seen all this stuff in various different pieces, and it's so cool to finally see it all come together. And I will say that after you finish the main story and all that, there's some really cool things that are teased. There's some really 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 cool things that are teased showing like what they have coming up. So I'm on board. I'm convinced that BioWare know what they're doing as far as the directions they want to take the story, and they're very cool, and a lot of characters that are like were left unanswered, right? So
the first free drop is March.
This week's Podcast Unlocked is brought to you by NordVPN. Hey, if you're watching a lot of sports like me and you hate blackouts, NordVPN is a great way to go. You can use NordVPN, a virtual private network, to watch live sporting events, TV shows, films that aren't available in your region by switching your virtual location to a country that is showing that event. No more blackouts. It's also good for plenty of other stuff like protecting your private data, your bank details, your passwords, your online identity. You can protect your data while you're traveling and using public Wi-Fi. NordVPN protects you wherever you are in the world. NordVPN threat protection also protects you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. NordVPN is also the fastest VPN in the world. No buffering or lagging while you're streaming, and it will stop your ISP bandwidth throttling. NordVPN is the price of a cup of coffee a month, so that is a super affordable, great way to go. To get the best discount off of your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/unlocked without the E. That's nordvpn.com/unlocked. And that'll give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. And best of all, there's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. nordvpn.com/unlocked without the E.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
Soon.
Yeah.
Coming right up.
When, we got a thing for Apex Legends. So.
And I think that's what Anthem's going to be, is you play it for 50, 60 hours, really enjoy it, and you're like, okay, cool. That was really fun, if that's your opinion. And then next month you dive back in for another 12 hours, and the month after that you dive in for another 8 hours, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. All right, Crackdown 3, the other big, really the other notable Xbox release that I want to zero in on.
What game is this?
Yeah, the first party thing. This publisher called Microsoft.
Microsoft Studios.
I've heard of them. Yeah, so Crackdown 3. We had previewed it 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah,
and Destin and I. That was us. We got a taste for both the Wrecking Zone and the campaign. And Brandon, you handled the final review and did a great job on.
Thank you.
Really just chewing into that game as far as just making sure you looked at every nook and cranny it turned out, as the score reflects, you found it to be a mediocre game.
Yeah.
Overall, not a bad game.
Right. What?
Not a bad game.
Oh,
but not a good game either.
What?
Destin over there playing my Twitter feed all weekend long.
Yeah. And to be clear, of course, most people that saw your review or tweeted at you, said, hey, yep, yeah, kind of sounds about right.
There was a lot of support. And what I will say is a lot of people did come out and say, yeah, that sounds about right. Or, yeah, that's what we kind of expected. There was a large contingent that was very upset because they're having a lot of fun with it. But there was a healthy contingent that came out and said, yeah, it is a mediocre game. I'm still enjoying it.
Yeah.
Which is 100% good.
Before we kind of get into that topic, because I do want to get into that topic and sort of the difference between trying to call a mediocre game a legitimately great game and just acknowledging a game's mediocre and still being able to allow yourself to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about both sides of the game just critically.
Sure.
How did you find, this final? We've been waiting for this game for so long. How is Crackdown 3 to play through?
Cool. Well, Crackdown 3 is a tale of two separate games, really.
Yeah.
You have the campaign, which is, if you're watching the video, it's what you're seeing right now. Essentially, it sort of lands you on this giant island called New Providence, and it is – let's see. You all right over there?
She's hanging tough. It's allergy season.
It is the island fortress of Terra Nova, which is the main sort of antagonist in the game. It's this company that is just doing generically bad things, and you are sent in to stop them. So the entire game revolves around really jumping into these different outposts, destroying the outposts, gaining intel about the boss, and then confronting a boss.
Which will sound familiar if you've played Crackdown 1.
Yep, pretty much. I found it to be very middle of the road. It is not bad.
No.
Not bad by any stretch. It's not good, in my opinion, by any stretch. The My biggest problem is that the game never evolves. Once you, what this crazy part is like once you finish the tutorial, you have seen effectively, minus the boss fights and some of the more dynamic fights, you've seen effectively everything that you're going to be doing for the next 8 to 12 hours to beat the campaign.
Right. But now, of course, you do collect the orbs, you get stronger, you can jump higher, you do progress.
So the one changing element is you, the player character. And that was another sort of problem that I had, is while there is this sort of compulsive satisfaction in finding these orbs and going around completing checklist style activities, whether it be foot races or car races or road races or stunt jumps or finding those agility orbs, it doesn't really matter. There's a satisfaction in that. If like I said in the review, if your brain is wired like mine, you really, really enjoy just like checking something off a list. I find satisfaction in that.
Yeah.
And I really did enjoy that to a degree. But it doesn't change fundamentally, and it doesn't really change the experience outside of that, which is the way that I interact with Crackdown 3 while checking these things off is running around and jumping, or holding left trigger to lock onto an enemy and holding right trigger to shoot until it's dead. Yes, you can melee punch and you can ground pound and all that stuff, and you can double jump and triple dash or double dash and triple jump.
One of some combination of that.
As you accrue more power, but like it never fundamentally changes, and that's fine. If you enjoy that and you can sort of turn your brain off and just find enjoyment and satisfaction in that, right, there is mindless satisfaction
to
be had.
Sort of popcorn-y sandbox.
Right. But by and large, it isn't engaging or compelling enough to really make it a good experience.
So the story's not super great either?
It's fine.
Is it that thing where, because the sense I got,
the definition of fine,
but
dude.
So Terry Crews featured prominently in the opening cutscene.
Right.
Do you not see him again until the final cutscene?
So that's what was really disappointing, because I am a huge Terry Crews fan. Like, huge.
Who is it? The guy's, he's one of the most awesome, absolutely, talented entertainers.
He can do no wrong entertainment wise. So yeah, I was really disappointed to find that, after Terry Crews had been injected into the marketing, and then we found out he was going to be a playable character, Commander Jackson, in the game, he is used to full effect in the opening cutscene, where he does his little Terry Crews dance and gets really energetic, and you're like, yeah, all right, yeah, let's do this. And then you find out that the sort of extent of his involvement afterwards is his face as an optional character skin for one of your agents.
Yep.
And then some canned dialogue that all agents have. So really, after that first cutscene, he's just a skin. Like, there's never any more of that Terry Crews personality.
Like, you being him doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't. And if you pick a different agent, which there are like 20 some odd other agents to choose from, if you pick a different agent, like, he's even more effectively removed, which was super disappointing, because I felt... Really?
You wanted more Terry.
I wanted more Terry, but what it felt like is Microsoft was looking for a way to make Crackdown more accessible and...
Or marketable.
And, brought on Terry Crews, paid him a bunch of money to be in this game to get that sort of high-profile celebrity attached to this game. But at the end of the day, it doesn't translate to much in the game.
That's too bad.
Yeah. So that's sort of the long and the short of campaign. It is fine. It is mediocre. It is middle of the road. If you find enjoyment in that, then I am genuinely happy for
Absolutely.
You.
Hey, you got the co-op. I know you were telling me about a dad that tweeted you that it was like co-oping with his son
with
and having
son.
A great time.
And he's like, hey, disagree with your review. I'm really enjoying this. And I very much am happy that anyone who can find enjoyment in something, like, that's what video games are for. That's why we play them. We don't play them to be bored, or we don't play them to be, anything other than just because we enjoy playing them.
Before we talk more about that, now just give the overview on Wrecking Zone.
Let's go to the Wrecking Zone. The Wrecking Zone is just...
A little more clear cut here.
It's straight up bad. Wrecking Zone very much feels like a technical demo that they threw into a game, or rather had to build a game around to support it. It feels like the best they could do with the technology. I know the sort of CloudGens and Dave Jones technology to create this dynamic, dramatic destruction and was really touted early on and on a large scale. And then as the years went on, they sort of pared back the involvement of it in the overall game.
Right.
to the point where now you have the most bare bones multiplayer suite.
Three maps, played two in modes.
A long
right?
time. Two modes. Oh. Essentially, kill confirmed from Call of Duty.
Right.
Kill somebody, go pick up their badge, which works well because the whole idea of Crackdown is movement, right? So it works well that rather than just killing someone, you need to kill them and then get there. That was a smart decision.
There's a lot of stylish ways to do it, and you should be hopefully enjoying it.
Yeah, the other mode is Territories, which is essentially King of the Hill, but there are two zones,
yeah.
Which I don't need to explain. The problem is the gameplay is wholly uninteresting. You hold left trigger to lock on to enemy players, and then the entire sort of dance of staying alive versus killing someone is to just sort of like try to break line of sight.
Yes.
And that's where that destruction comes in, where you destroy buildings and bring the whole thing crumbling down, which is cool at first. Once you see like skyscrapers begin to break apart and start to rain down, that's really cool. Or I would shoot out the ankles of a giant statue and then it would collapse and sort of topple with sort of real world weight and physics behind them, you know? And that is cool to see as well. It's not applied to this multiplayer. Yes, you can blow through walls to gain a new line of sight. That is fine. Like, it's upsetting to see. What disappointed me the most is that this technology is so cool and it was used to such limited effect in this multiplayer. The multiplayer is not engaging. It's not fun. There is no progression system whatsoever.
Oh.
There's no party system whatsoever. Right. So basically,
you get kicked to the menu after.
Basically,
the game, right?
you select what mode you want to play. You go into a matchmaking screen. You get into a game with nine other random people. You play your game, and then once it's over, you're kicked back out to that main menu again, and you have to matchmake again.
Which is that's literally what it was like pre Halo 2.
Before Halo 2, yeah. So there's this whole idea of this multiplayer's destruction and huge scale and scope, but what it boils down to is jumping around and locking onto enemies, you know, and outside the love of doing that, which is hard because after you've done it for two rounds, you've kind of seen all there is to it. There's no progression or there's no reason. There's no incentive to keep doing this. You can't even play with your friends, even if your incentive is just to have a good time with your friends.
Yeah. At the preview event, they started us in multiplayer and we spent over an hour playing multiplayer,
which is probably too long.
And I was looking around. I knew I was done. This is not a thing that I need to play for more than 20 minutes.
That's the thing is like as the reviewer, I played a bunch.
Of course.
You have to. So before anyone jumps on me, know that I played a lot of Wrecking Zone. Yeah. After the first two rounds, I was like, cool. I don't need to play this anymore. Of course I did. I continued to play it for many hours, which, you know, was not the best time. But it's just once you've played a couple rounds, you've seen it, literally seen it all.
Yeah.
There are nine different weapons you can choose from. There are two different gadgets you can choose from, but one of them is a vertical launcher. And if you're watching the video, you can see how vertical you already are without the gadget that you throw down to like boost yourself into the air. So it really kind of removes the need for that. I don't know why you would go with anything other than the overshield. It's such a poor experience.
So you ended up, you reviewed them separately because we got them separately. We got campaign first, but the overall score, you gave the whole package a 5.0, yep. Which is
mediocre
by the IGN definition. It is not bad.
Yeah.
It's also not good.
It's just a score
but it's
we also
mediocre.
Give very rarely, so I can understand sometimes the shock of seeing it.
Yeah. Well, the problem is
I give a lot of Destiny content a mediocre score.
The problem is there's this idea that the scale runs from like a 6 to a 10.
Right.
Right. Because
or people think it does.
Or people think it does. Here's why is because as a video game site like IGN, there are dozens of games reviewed every week or released every week.
We can't review them all.
We can't possibly review them all. So what do we do? What are the criteria we use to decide what game to review? The size of it, the interest of it.
Yes.
The interest of the audience particularly.
Exactly.
And whether or not we want to review them. Like no one wants to review a shovelware.
Cabela's Duck
I've
Hunter
had to review those.
37.
Yeah.
Like when you first get on, you're like, Dan's like, here, review this. It's just like, why?
Well, even now, but like
it's good to like know those things, but it's not what we're going to prioritize reviewing when we can review something that's, you know.
Well, look at last Friday. There were five games that came out. Yeah.
Of significance.
Five big games that came out. There's no way in the world we're going to review anything else. You know, we just possibly can't. We can't possibly do it.
Right.
Which is why when you get those big scope games, those are the ones we select to review. By and large, if a company spends enough money on a game, it's going to be at least decent.
Usually.
Usually like decent.
Yeah.
You'd hope. Which is why the majority of things that are reviewed, you see score in the sixes and sevens and eights. So when a large game like that comes out with enough interest behind it that we're like, okay, we need to review this, and it turns out not to be so good, people see a five or a six, and they're like, well, I don't understand why you're hating on it. I'm not hating.
Yeah, it is important. That is the reason why we put the word descriptors that go along with each number range on the review scale.
Right.
From mediocre to okay to good to great to amazing to masterpiece from five on up.
Yeah.
And then four is bad, and then it gets I don't even know what the bottom of it is, because those we go to so rarely for the reasons you talk about.
It's like awful, terrible, disaster.
Yeah. And it's important to look at the word like that. That word does matter. And we put it right in the review box prominently for a reason.
Not only that, but there are descriptions that go along with each of those numeric and adjectives. So like a 5.0 is mediocre. But if you read the text, it says does some things right, but is pretty forgettable, which is what I feel Crackdown 3 is.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, we come back like the game I thought back to, because, you know, again, the silent majority is right there with you. They think, you know, they might have tried it on Game Pass. Maybe they bought it, or, you know, they've been seeing all the coverage and seeing what the game's been looking like up until now. And people say, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, that's too bad this one didn't turn out. Maybe I'll check it out on Game Pass. But, there, you know, there's this the vocal contingent that comes out and just starts attacking you on social media because they love it's a great game, and it's just like Crackdown 1, and that was a great game, so therefore this is a great game, and this, that, and the other thing, and it's like, hold on.
I heard a lot of, it's the best Crackdown ever. It's just Crackdown 1, but prettier.
Right, so it accomplished what it set out to do, therefore it should get a great score. It's like, well, if I set out to make an iPhone game that just, if I touch the screen, it turns the screen red, and I successfully do that.
Well done.
Does that mean it gets a 10 out of 10? No, because it's not fun.
Yeah.
It's terrible. No one wants that.
I mean, and again, like this review, yes, this review is the official opinion of IGN. This is the site's review of it, but it is just an opinion.
Absolutely.
You do not have to agree with me. You don't have to agree with IGN, and I urge you to go out and look at other sites as well.
I mean, that's what you should always be doing, I think.
Yes,
like, exactly. Yes, please do your reviews. Thank you. But also, inform yourself on other opinions. Like, I personally like finding my favorite thing and reading the worst reviews, because it's really interesting to see like what people didn't like about something that I loved and learning from it. It's like, oh, yeah, that like, I've had some critical conversations about like my favorite things of all time. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a good point. Like, this thing I didn't really see because I just didn't see from that perspective.
Now,
and it's just really good to learn from that.
Yeah.
It's not like it hurts me.
And you will
that thing is not me.
On this topic,
you know,
you will find that the critical consensus, there was a general critical consensus on Crackdown.
Yeah,
mediocre game.
I think Metacritic started at just above a 6 and now is just below a 6.
Right.
It's 5.
So you're right in the range, if that means anything to you, which it shouldn't, because, you know, if everybody always reviews right to a Metacritic average, what is the point of reviews? It's okay. And what I want to come back to is that it's okay to acknowledge the flaws in a game, or that a game might be mediocre. It's okay to acknowledge those things while still enjoying it.
Yeah.
The example, the Xbox example, the direct apples to apples comparison I want to make is to Rise, Son of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Because that game, that was a launch title. I was pretty excited for it. I mean, it was visually, it was just like, wow, this is a next generation game. This looks amazing. I played through the entire game. I loved the story. I loved Marius as a character. I loved a lot of the bits of it. But yeah, it was a repetitive game. It needed a lot more combat depth. And yeah, I think IGN gave it around a 5 or 6. I think it might have even been Brian Albert, if I remember correctly, reviewing that one. I totally see that. Like, yeah, I enjoyed it. Carry good memories of Rise with me, but yeah, it was a flawed game. And I feel like the community in general accepted that was the sort of, everybody was okay with that in 2013. Like, Rise. Yeah, that was, boy, super pretty game, really neat stuff in it. Yeah, it had some flaws. But I feel like we fast forward 6 years
Yeah.
Or, well, five years and change to now to Crackdown 3. And there's this bizarre undercurrent of people that just won't allow themselves, just won't accept critical opinion, that it's got to be a great game and everybody else is wrong. And it's just, that's scary to me.
Yeah. I mean,
I would argue the inverse is happening with Anthem right now. Everybody wants you to be only critical and you're not allowed to like it.
Yeah.
That's a good counter.
Which is weird because I actually enjoy it.
Yeah. So I think it's definitely an interesting time to be in right now. But I'll just say this.
It's not.
Just because Brandon has a critical opinion of Crackdown doesn't mean that it's going to affect my enjoyment of the game whatsoever.
Let's not confuse critical with middling, right?
Like, well, your review was
criticism.
Correct? Yeah. Speaking of criticism.
Yeah. You can have criticism of things that are good, but. Yeah. My middling opinion of the game is different from the criticism of it.
I meant to use the word in the form of you critique the review professionally for IGN.com.
Right.
So your opinion isn't going to detract from my enjoyment of Crackdown 3
when I
play it. And everyone's out for blood for Anthem, and we were very negative on the show just today about Anthem, but I'm still enjoying it and having a good time, and I don't see a problem with that. And it's really concerning to me when I say this on this show and I can already see the comments in my head about how I'm paid off or how I'm corrupt in some way. I've never taken a bribe from anybody.
Of course.
Yeah, still, there's people that truly believe this is happening.
The people that say that are not the people whose opinions you should value, though.
I don't value
their opinions.
And
they're not the majority of the audience.
Yeah.
And I understand and respect our audience enough to know that. But it's important to say, hey, this isn't happening.
Right.
It's not.
And I want to,
even saying that doesn't matter because
you can't really win.
Yeah, well, by and large, everyone knows that review sites are not paid off. Like, first of all, the whole idea that publishers and gaming sites sort of have these secret backroom deals where a big sack with a dollar sign is exchanged for a nine, that shit just doesn't happen. You know, so when somebody comes up and says that, you know, reiterates that sort of narrative, immediately it just sets off a flag for me of like, I can't take you seriously. But again, you're allowed to like things that are bad and you're allowed to dislike things that are good. Case in point, I've never really enjoyed the Gears series. Just never got into it. Wasn't my thing. Couldn't really get into the world.
Right.
I understand that by and large, most people enjoy it. And the converse of that is like my favorite movie of all time is Big Trouble in Little China, which is universally regarded as a very fine movie, you know, leaning slightly toward bad. And that's fine. I don't care. I really enjoy it. So I appreciate all the people who came out in support saying, hey, I totally agree with you. I understand where people came out and saying that, like, I totally disagree with you. Neither of those two camps really affects my opinion of the game. I did what I did. My best piece of advice for people is to find someone who has like the same – look at game reviewers as someone who has the same taste of music in you.
Yeah, like
you.
Like a friend that you share a lot of pop culture interests.
I used to use a metaphor of like sommeliers, right? It's like you have to find somebody with the same wine palate, though I don't think that really hits the demographic. So find somebody who likes the same kind of music with you. If you're really into rock – find a friend who's really into rock, and when they say, hey, I really like this new band, you know
there's a good chance
I should listen to this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I talked about this after we went over the preview impressions after the preview event. You know, I came on here and talked about how I'd had a line written in my preview and then I scrapped it about, and we sort of had the conversation about, it's a Game Pass game is like the 21st century version of It's a Rental. Yeah. And I feel like that you were making a good point to me this morning in the office, Brandon, about how that has sort of kind of muddied the waters in this topic specifically of what is the value of a game, you know, because we specifically by design for these kinds of reasons. And we've always done this. We don't financial, like the price of a game, because the price of a game changes. You know, we saw, what was it, two?
Well, not even that, but like I have more money than I have time right now. So for me,
right, and the equation's different for different people.
Right.
Right. But even, you know, we saw, was it a couple of falls ago? And I know we got to move on to topics, but the next topic, but, you know, we saw a couple of falls ago. Was it like Dishonored 2 or a couple of big titles that came out like in October? Mm. and then they were half price a month later. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, we don't review them as $60 games or as, oh, now it's $30. Right. Now the score goes up. And it's the same way here is, you know, it's not a Crackdown 3 is a $60 game or a Crackdown 3 is part of your $10 a month Game Pass subscription. But that, right. you know, how you're coming at it can affect sort of, it's like the whole thing of, oh, well, I'll watch that movie on a plane. Because there's sort of you have a different expectation for it. So
yeah,
you know, I think that's sort of been part of this weird Crackdown conversation.
Well, the fact that it's on Game Pass and Microsoft was running or is running a promotion where $2 for the first month. So effectively, you can play Crackdown 3 for $2 if you sign up to Game Pass. But this whole conversation came up because people have access to this game that, you know, otherwise they wouldn't otherwise have access to because no one's going to drop $60 for a game that they're not sure about. But if it's included with Game Pass, and I have Game Pass, which I think is one of probably the best deal in gaming right now.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot more people have had access to it and there's no sort of financial value there because they didn't have to spend money on it. So they're like, hey, I effectively am playing this for free because I'm a Game Pass subscriber and it's not that bad. It's like, no, it's not that bad, but you're also taking the financial side of that coin right. into consideration where I don't think that's right. Because otherwise, every time a Steam sale came up, we'd have to re-review every game, you know?
So, yeah, lots to chew. I mean, I don't mind spending 40 minutes of this show because these two, I mean, these are two of the most significant releases for Xbox gamers, probably for all of 2018, 2019. You know, these are two biggies. So I'm glad we spent a lot of time with those and the four of us have spent a lot of time with these two games. So looking for in-depth discussions about the process of making video games from the very people who actually make them, then IGN is happy to present Starburns Audio's upcoming podcast, Humans Who Make Games. Hosted by comedian and Adam Ruins Everything star Adam Conover, Humans Who Make Games offers insight into the origins of games like Spelunky, Binding of Isaac, and more from the people who made them. The first episode will be with Binding of Isaac developer Edmund McMillan. Stay tuned for more from Humans Who Make Games on IGN, and be sure to subscribe to the show's Apple Podcasts feed for new episodes as they debut. Let's do a couple of news items here. We're going to stay on the BioWare front here and talk about Mass Effect, Destin, near and dear to your heart. So, in an interview,
I had missed this story, so I'm excited.
Yeah, in an interview with Polygon, Casey Hudson sat down and said that Mass Effect is, quote, very much alive. He says, in my mind, it's very much alive. I'm thinking all the time about things that I think will be great. It's just a matter of getting back to it as soon as we can. And Mark Dara, who's executive producing both Anthem and Dragon Age, says we're definitely not done with Mass Effect. There's a lot of stories to be told. We could pull on the threads we put down with Andromeda. We could pull on threads from Mass Effect 3. There's a lot of interesting space to be explored.
I saw Mike Gamble tweet space. And he's like, well, duh. Like, of course it's not dead, which is always reassuring. I don't.
Hey, John, your action bar is on the bottom of the B-roll right now.
Oh, no. Anyway.
Thank you.
Playing video.
We use computers.
But yeah, I guess so. What do you guys, real, you know, quick here, maybe like in 5 minutes, what do you want? How do you want to see Mass Effect come back? You know, we heard
after not Andromeda.
After Dragon Age.
So no. How? Where in the, you know, how do you want this to go when the day comes? And how do you think? When do
First
you think
Contact War.
Thank you. All right, Destin, go.
100%. First Contact War with the Turians, where the humans first encountered the Turians for the first time, going through the Mass Effect relay.
So the Star Trek First Contact.
Yeah, going back, potentially looking at some of the early weapons and learning how to interact with those different communities, sort of re-revealing the universe to everybody.
Would the game end at the Citadel? Would that be the
harvest of Mass Effect, if you will?
So that took place way before the Citadel, but they could do some time jumping mechanics. But I think that's the smartest entry to the series. I do not think they should revisit Andromeda. I don't think they will.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that just kind of ended there unexpectedly. Like we're supposed to get the Koryans and Hanar, like they just never showed up. So sorry, you guys are in a book now.
Yeah,
which is fine. Books are great, but they weren't in the game, and that's very disappointing. I do think that they could kind of just leave Andromeda where it was, and that'd be okay. I would actually like to see other stories explored because I think that universe they've set up is just really interesting. Mm-hmm. And I really like how they designed their aliens and all these other cultures, and I would like to see more of that outside of what we already know. Mm-hmm. And I think that was something that was really exciting for me with Andromeda, and also Letdown because we didn't get to see as many as we thought we were going to mm-hmm. see. But I wouldn't. I would also like a Blasto game. It's fine.
I think Andromeda was set 500 years. How long was it?
Way after. Like everybody's dead by right. the time Andromeda comes out. There's no Easter eggs or anything from Mass Effect 3, is there, Miranda? I don't what think do so.
In Andromeda. Yeah.
There is?
There's like a 2-3 tie-in thing.
Oh, okay. Hmm. I don't remember.
There's like a whole storyline.
Oh, yeah. There's audio logs,
yeah,
right?
That's like, yeah. That's a huge thing.
I remember. Yeah. So what was your question?
So you want to go back to the kind of the beginning effectively of Mass Effect as a multi-alien species, inner space travel kind of thing. You want to go back to effectively a prequel of sorts.
Yeah, well, in addition, you could go back even further to the first time that the Reapers showed up before, and like there was the original reset. Cycle? Yeah, because there's multiple Reaper cycles in the history.
True.
How that failure happened.
Would you be satisfied with that, though?
Yeah. I mean, if they tell the story well enough.
Yeah.
What the challenge they have in front of them is, if you had a Citadel today with NPCs just standing around, just sort of awkwardly doing a shuffle, they have that in Anthem, and it feels weird. And I'm just really curious to see how they would be able to adapt that sort of product to a modern day development cycle.
Miranda, where are you taking it if you had the choice?
Kind of what I hinted on is I like to do something new. I think there's a lot to do with the Mass Effect universe, and I already love the characters and like the history they've already told, and I kind of don't want them to touch on that. Like, just let it be. Let that important moment stand.
Where in the timeline sounds good to you?
I don't know.
Is just not thing? Related to anything that's been done.
Yeah, like just keep going further away from what we already know and do something different with that universe.
Yeah.
I actually do like your idea of having a different Reaper cycle, just to kind of get to explore, again, more of that universe, but independent of what Shepard does. I think that's what I want. I just want it to be very far from Shepard and the crew, because for me, like, that story is set, right? Like, the story's been told. I don't want to see anything else. I want Shepard to be done. I want all of that to be done.
I'm with you. I think let's just whole new cast of characters. Maybe, depending on where in the timeline, potentially a cameo from a Rex, maybe somebody beloved like that.
References or something.
Yeah.
Rex can survive that long, right, in canon. Like they live a long time.
Yeah. True.
Mm-hmm. And also but, books.
Yeah, I think, I'm just wondering, trying to think the logistics of this through. So, Anthem is just now coming out.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have a support team. That team, they're probably going to be working on that for quite a while, whether that it means an Anthem 2 or, you know, how that sort of looks. And then you have the other team that we know of. To the best of our knowledge, BioWare Edmonton is two teams, the other being the Dragon Age team. We got a tease of that at the Game Awards, but by all accounts, that game is three years away. That is a next-gen game. So that means, realistically, assuming BioWare keeps Mass Effect internal.
Mass Effect 2025.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at, it's going to be a long, long wait.
Yeah.
Because I think the soonest, like, the best case scenario I can think of for Edmonton developing a new Mass Effect game, not outsourcing it to Austin or just another studio. You know, they did that with Andromeda. It didn't go well. Is unless a lot of Anthem support rolls off to BioWare Austin, who currently does they did help with Anthem,
yes,
and they also have built and continue to support Star Wars: The Old Republic.
Mm-hmm.
So if the bulk of it offloads to them, and then maybe the Anthem team starts rolling on a new Mass Effect game, and then maybe does that, and then goes to Anthem 2 after, but I feel like they're going to stick with Anthem
for
a while.
You're like, divining stuff that like is just unknowable right now.
Totally. And so the soonest I can...
Anthem and Dragon Age, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we'd even see a Mass Effect project get started until after Dragon Age comes out, and then maybe it's that team.
Yeah, I agree. I think Anthem is enough of a game as a service, and they have... I mean, speaking with John Warner and Mark Dara and even Casey Hudson and Mike Gamble, they have plans for that game for the foreseeable future. You know, I'm not going to do the whole Activision 10 years of Destiny thing,
right,
but they have plans for the foreseeable future as, you know, those teasers at the end of the story, the post-launch content they've already announced, that game is around for a while, and I think it's going to be around in enough of a capacity to warrant its own team to continue working on it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And it's possible they might staff up a third team at Edmonton to build a Mass Effect game. That's an option as well. But it is also worth remembering that to the best of our knowledge, the bulk of the sort of the core Mass Effect team went on to Anthem.
Thank you.
So they are, you know, if a new Mass Effect happens, it could be with different BioWare people, or if maybe those people roll off of Anthem and hand it off to other BioWare folks, and that core group does move on to Mass Effect. But either way, I bring this whole story up because while it's awesome to hear them say this, I think it's important to help set fans' expectations that, again, reading the tea leaves as best we can, it's probably going to be a long time before we see another Mass Effect game.
Which is okay.
Yeah.
They could also just remake one, but make it like 150 hours and tell more stories within that time frame.
They could do like a Persona remake.
Honestly, I'd be okay with that because
I love... I mean, you look at how Persona does it with like Persona 4 and 4 Golden. Yeah. It like expands the story, refines things, and it's just like a really neat experience to like relive that.
I would love that.
And I think they could. There's a lot of things they could fix within one to now, just for controls and.
I mean, that's true. But if you're going to invest,
I totally disagree.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I just think everything. I mean, totally valid opinions, right? I just think everything that BioWare has done this point tells us that those guys are natural born storytellers that would never want to go and retread on the same ground. I think the best Mass Effect game that I can think of is whatever they're cooking up in their brains that'll come out in 8 years, 7 years, 6 years.
But what if you get one in between?
Why though? Like, why would you want?
Because I
want
to replay it.
All right, and that's totally fair.
Counterpoint. Totally fair. Andromeda story. Okay. Anthem story, okay.
Oh, I like
Mass
Anthem
Effect
story.
1 story, absolutely phenomenal.
That's true.
Top tier.
Sure.
And I would love to see them flesh out more stories within that time frame.
I'm with you, Brandon, in that I think if significant time and resources were going to be put into a Mass Effect project, I'd rather have it be a new thing. Mm. However...
And that's not saying you can't go back to the first era, right?
Right.
Of Mass Effect 1, but like I don't want to see a remake. I don't want to see Mass Effect 1.5, you know?
Effect 1 from Saren's perspective.
Oh.
But hold on. If I will say there is a little part of me that... you know, Mass Effect 1, 2007. Mm-hmm. If they remade it,
came out.
Resident Evil 2 style,
that's
or it was
that's
a complete,
what I'm talking about.
That sort of reinterprets parts of it.
Obviously, that's what we meant.
Yeah,
so that's absolutely.
Yeah,
that could be interesting. But yeah, I knew is good.
I like the stories.
It was good. Yeah,
me too.
So there you go. All right, we got to get moving
Mass
here.
Mass Effect 1 again.
As play a man. Mass Effect 1. Haven't you played it like 40 times?
As a man.
Let me just do
the new game plus.
we'll do loot box next week. But I do want to do a trivia question since I wasn't here last week. We have Miranda and Destin tied at 2, Brandon at 1. Everybody's just right there. So,
man, missed a couple weeks.
This should be a layup, I think, for everyone, but you never quite know.
I got this.
All right. Destin, I know you said before the show you know this one as well. So
this is a softball.
Miranda, pressure's on. Pressure's on. Mickey, whose gamer tag is Freddy Ain't Dead, asks, in Soul Calibur 2, turn back the clock here, each console version got a platform-specific bonus exclusive character. Mishima from Tekken was on the PS2. The GameCube version got Link, famously.
Hayachi.
And
man.
Who...
Hayachi.
Who got... thank you. Who got... who did Xbox get?
I both know this.
We know.
Swamp Thing, knows, so. Hellboy, The Darkness... Or Spawn.
Can you guys go first?
No.
No, we know it.
Why not? That's fine. That's cheating. I can
tell you what.
It's not cheating.
It's not cheating.
It's collusion.
No, it's fine.
Do you remember this one, Miranda?
I absolutely do not. I was so young when this came out. I'll go with C.
The Darkness.
Let's say it at the same time, Brandon.
Three, two, one, Spawn.
I I was like, there's no way it's Spawn, because there's that other fighting game joke about him in, was it Mortal Kombat or something?
Yes.
Oh, people want him in
Mortal Kombat,
Bonus points, do you remember the next
Swamp
SoCal?
Thing was in Injustice 2.
The Soul Calibur 3 had the Star Wars characters. Uh-huh. Were those platform specific? I thought they were.
Darth Vader, was PlayStation. Yoda was Xbox.
And then Starkiller was
everything, I think.
Yeah, he could be unlocked on both. Yeah. And I remember playing as Yoda because I've been in the Xbox ecosystem forever.
Green Yoda.
And I'd fight Vader's, and I'm like, this isn't fair because Vader was so broken.
Yeah.
And then people were like, no, Yoda's broken. His hitbox is so tiny.
Yeah.
You can't please anyone.
All right. If you have an Xbox trivia question you want to try and stump the panel with, send it to unlocked@ign.com. I need, four multiple choice answers. Note the correct one, and we'll play again next week as the Unlock Block Trivia Challenge rolls on for 2019. I'm Ryan McCaffrey. You can find me on Twitter at @DMC_Ryan. I don't think I have anything to promote. If you're a baseball video game fan, Xbox is never getting a sim baseball game. Don't ask anymore. I've asked EA. It ain't happening. But if you happen to have a PS4 as well, I've got new videos up on MLB The Show 19. The developers, Ramon and Steve, came in, did a couple different videos with them talking about this new stuff this year. So, yes, I'm promoting PlayStation content on an Xbox podcast.
How dare you?
Well, hey, we're never going to get a baseball game because RBI
I'm
baseball
sorry,
doesn't count.
Super Mega Baseball 2 would disagree.
An MLB licensed sim. Yeah, thank you, Brandon.
But you can kill the pitcher in that game.
Well, rude.
Yeah, I accidentally did. I hit a line drive and killed the pitcher. So, hey, I'm totally derailed. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Tyrell. If you haven't seen the Crackdown review stuff, that's basically how I spent all my week last week and a little in the weekend prior. So you have an overall review, you have a campaign review, and a multiplayer review. If you're interested, go check them out. If you have Game Pass, check it out.
Why not?
If you are looking for some mindless enjoyment, check it out.
Miranda.
I'm Miranda. I still have a lot of allergies. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and other places at Havoc Grows, and that's Havoc with a K. Right now, I am jumping between the Apex Legends wiki and the Anthem wiki, as well as some other featurey things. So I'm just going to try to live.
And Miranda presented an award at the Crunchyroll Anime Awards this past weekend, so we're all very proud of her.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And jealous. That's a career bucket list item right there. Yeah. That's great.
It was really neat. I had to present the award for best film, and we had some thoughts, which was really nice.
That's a big award.
To talk about it. Yeah, it was really great. So I think the VOD's probably up on Twitch. Not sure if Crunchyroll's uploading that to their YouTube, but I did that as well this weekend.
Fantastic. Awesome.
Great job.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Destin, take us home.
Yeah, so working on a lot of Anthem stuff for IGN. Some positive, some critical. But not the review. James Duggan is working on the review. Follow me on Twitter. I normally don't do this call anymore, at Destin Legary, because next week I might be doing something really cool, and I'll be announcing it shortly, hopefully, if everything...
You're not leaving IGN, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
That's not what I'm announcing on Twitter.
Right? I can't handle another one today.
Yeah. And then, of course, I do stream regularly over at twitch.tv/TheDestinChannel. I got to get my shameless plug in.
Yeah.
Playing a lot of Anthem.
Plug it.
Destiny is coming out in March. Thanks, Miranda.
Good stuff.
Are you going to continue playing on PC?
Yes.
Let's play together.
All right. Let's do it.
Cool.
Me too.
Yeah. And Miranda.
Awesome.
And then we'll just say neener, neener.
Miranda, when you get to a certain point, I want to play with you because I missed the cutscene.
Okay.
I really want to see
I'll
a cutscene.
Let you know. Let me know what you mean.
Yes. All right. Thank you, everybody. We will be back for 383. That'll be a palindrome.
Yay.
That's next week. We'll see you then.
That's a palindrome.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.